Merry Christmas, man.
Okay, we went. I had Zulu 1 mission. I don't remember the date. Do you have the dates?
No, that's
all right. Okay. Well, we had Zulu 1 that morning, and we got up to Kontoon, and the pilot wanted me to go into MACV and ask this one captain there if he had any distribution for Tancan. And I asked him if we had any distribution for Tancan. He said that he didn't have any, you know. I looked at him. He looked at me. And so I took it just no for an answer and left. I went out to Bird and told him he didn't have any distribution for Tancan. When I got out there, they said we're going to Tancan. They cleared the Bird and everything to go to Tancan. We left the MACV compound to go to Tancan. We got up there just above the clouds, above Tancan. We had planned on going into Tancan. And a Gladiator bird came over there and told us it had been overrun. We didn't even know what was happening in the area or anything else. And so we didn't go in there. And we went back to MACV compound, found out that Tancan had been overrun, and they didn't know that we were headed for Tancan. And they had another mission for us to pull. Well, he called some other people from another compound. I don't know the name of the compound. You can get it from Vogel.
Okay.
But, they give us a mission to extract some people from Docto 2, some American advisors. And went in there, went in the south side because they directed us in the south side, and we took fire. And they say they directed us out the south side, told us there was 51s, but I never did hear them tell us there were 51s, and I was listening to radios. And going out, we run into four or five 51 cows, and I think a 37, and they hit us in the engine. Oil got on the engine and started smoking, and we went down.
Did you see any exploding shells come at you?
No, all I could see was just muzzle flashes. And then when we left, well, we crashed, and it seemed like I just rolled over and got up.
Did you return fire?
It was a wall because first there was a pilot, the two pilots were pinned in the aircraft, and I tried getting Hunsinger out. And Hunsinger's helmet, I looked, he was pinned in the aircraft, I couldn't get him out, and when I finally got where I could look at his head, blood was just pouring out of his head, and I figured he'd got hit in the head with a 51, because he run dead, it would run straight into him. And then I managed to get Ellen out.
As far as you know, is Hunsinger still in the aircraft?
He's burned, he's right on top of the aircraft, his body is burned, it's
on
decomposed.
Top of the aircraft?
It's, well, the metal's melted down around him.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
I got Hunsinger out, the Major I dragged out, and got in a clearing.
So you got Ellen out?
Ellen.
Yeah.
And we started taking a lot of AK fire. And so I took and popped some 79 rounds off. That's all I had with me right there. And finally, by the time I started getting situated and calmed down after a while, we stopped taking fire. I moved around, got everybody located. And everybody was hurt bad enough they couldn't move on their own. So we got everybody together. Every now and then, some tracers, they'd fire rounds across the grass or something else. But other than that, we didn't take too much fire. We could hear the 51 positions around us. They were close enough, we could hear them talking. They never did come down and check the wreckage. Took the panels and doors found off the aircraft and built shelters and got all the weapons I could together. And
did you do all this or did anybody help you?
Well, the others couldn't really move for about 4 days.
What was the matter with Captain Keller?
Keller, he was bruised up real bad. All his muscles, they might have been pulled or they must have been torn back because I drug him, set him up against the bank for the first 4 days. Well, after we got a campsite situated and I got more or less a perimeter set up.
How far from the aircraft was the campsite?
About 10 to 15, maybe 25 meters. And used parts of the aircraft for shelter. We needed water, so there was a river there. We were about 25 meters from the river. And I went down to the river and got water in one of the ammo cans and came off the ship. We had water for 4 days and seeds I scraped up off the dead bodies after it got cold enough. After about 2 days, we had some seeds with us. People had on them, and then the dead bodies had out in the river had some seas on them. rats, so I got them off of them. We ate those.
Get back to the enemy that was shooting at you right after you were shot down. Was anybody else able to return fire? Or were you the only
I believe American? Vogel returned some fire because I could hear an AK popping, and he had an AR-15. I could hear it popping. And he was right in the bush over me. Finally, I drug him over to us. He's more or less in a daze. I think he was just firing for fire.
And you and Vogel were the only Americans returning fire. Do you have any idea how many VC were out there shooting at you?
There was maybe one or two around the area, and the rest were in positions, 51 positions.
Okay, go ahead. Continue with the story.
Anyway, we got everything set up, and we ran out of food about the fourth or fifth day, I guess. Somewhere around the sixth. It was sometime while we were there anyway. Arvin came wandering into camp. He didn't have a weapon or anything. He had a mosquito net. And he showed us some greens we could eat. And we boiled them, ate them. Found berries we could eat. And when Captain Keller, I was scouting around a couple times looking for food and see what the situation was. And
how far away from your base did you go looking for food?
About 700, up to 700 meters.
By this time, Captain Keller could walk around.
About the fourth, fifth day, he could move around. That was about the fourth, fifth day when I started getting out of the camp itself. Close to the ninth day, he was getting around pretty good. He could walk and get up on his own. So I went scouting. I found a 51 site that the air had knocked out, the cobras had knocked out, and there was some detonators and AK rounds laying around, stacked up under this little shack. And I found a mountain yard boat, took it back, because Captain Keller's arms were still bad enough he couldn't swim. And we decided to go looking for food, and if we couldn't find food, to go for help or a radio. And we left on the ninth or tenth day and went for food. Got up to Docto 2, found rice with glass in it. Saw troops in Docto 2 in the compound. Some burn-up tanks and stuff. Searched around, found some equipment that helped us. And we headed out.
How did you get into the compound?
We just walked in and took it easy, and then we noticed the troops, so we got down behind a tank, old burn-up tank.
Daytime or nighttime?
Daytime. And most of everything we did was during the daytime, because at night we couldn't see that good. Most times it was a cloud cover, and I didn't even have any coordinates really until after I started getting up moving around. So finally, me and Captain Keller set out, and we made it. We went over on a hill and slept outside of Tancan, above Tancan night. And next morning early, we got up, and he wanted to go to Docto District. He thought he hadn't been country that long, and he figured the Docto District would be all right, be safe. And I just couldn't see it, but he talked me into it, so we went ahead and went. And finally, when we got up there, and we did see NVA, the village around Docto District, I showed him that there wasn't a flag flying at Docto District, and it was a good sign that there were NVA there, and then we saw more NVA. And so we left. We were headed for Kontoon, or our radio, whichever came first. We had to stay part of the day in a ditch by Tancan, the compound there, because there was NVA in the compound that could see us from the perimeter. And then,
do you know if you were spotted or not?
No, we weren't spotted, I don't believe. One time, this was a lot later, though. We might have been spotted. I don't believe we were.
The base position where you left the casualties, was that position discovered by VC or NVA?
No, and they might have seen the wreckage, but where the wreckage was, and where we got everybody in the deep grass off to the side of the wreckage, all they could see is wreckage, and the wreckage looked beat up and burnt. It was all, it didn't look like there was any survivors, really, just to look at it.
All right. Now, go ahead now. You're going to Kontoon.
Okay, and on the way to Kontoon, we had to spend the night this culvert, or had to spend part of the evening in a culvert until we could get around the compound at Tan Can. We made it around the culvert at Tan Can, and we'd found some bananas and some banana plantations, ate them. Made it, finally talked, we were headed toward the road. We thought maybe on the road, or near the road, we might have a chance. I knew there was NBA there, but I didn't know anything about the river. I knew the road from the air because we'd flown it enough times. So we headed toward the road, spent one night down a village garden, you know, under this shed. Next morning, crossed the river, because we did not, we couldn't really tell if it's deep or not. And next morning, we had to get across it, so we went ahead and tried. We crossed it, and then we made it toward, we were within 300 meters of the highway, and we come up on a foxhole, fresh foxhole, and found a blanket laying there. So I picked up the blanket, and Captain Keller saw NVA, and he was just, yeah, he was low, going through the grass away from us. He must have just got up and left, you know. And that'd be the only one I could think that might have seen us, but I don't believe he did, because we saw him, and you could tell who he was, you could tell the type of weapon he had, and we ducked, we left the other way and went up in the mountains.
AK-47?
Yeah, an AK. And so we made it back across that river again. There's a little canal, more or less. Made it up to the woods, traveled around down the mountain some, and we decided we needed to cross the river because there were less streams on the other side of the river to cross if we were headed toward Tan Can. We never did make cross the river because we found a boat. We figured we could make it down the river. And we put everything in the boat, and the boat overturned in the rapids and lost most of our equipment. And then we run into Arvin, a wounded Arvin.
So you ran into two Arvins altogether?
Altogether.
Go ahead. Okay.
And this Arvin, we helped him by bandaging him up some. He had shrapnel wounds. He looked like a deserter. He torn everything off his uniform. All he had on was a pair of swim trunks and some bandages and a shirt with all the patches torn off of it, everything. And a pair of boots and a knapsack over his back. And he tried to talk us out of everything we did, but it was my idea to take him along at first. And finally I realized what I'd done, but Captain Keller, in the first, didn't want to take him along. Anyway, we went down the river finally. He just tagged along with us till we got in these woods one evening, and there was an old Firebase Zulu. It wasn't old, it was pretty new, and it looked like, it didn't look like there was any movement there or anything. And I'd lost my boots, my feet were torn up, so Captain Keller said he'd go up, see if it was friendly, and then wait there, and if it was, we'd go up there with him, you know. So finally, we all ended up going up there, spending the night. The dean did nothing but harass us all night, and on the way up there, he'd, VC, VC, tell us it's Buku VC, you know. And like, we knew we had to take some chances or we were never going to get anything accomplished. We just sat in one place. We starved to death. And finally, he tagged along with us after we led the way and went in the compound, spent the night. Next morning, got up, found some grenades, a few things we could use, a couple 79 rounds. Captain Keller noticed two mountain yards prowling around the area. So we got down, waited. Finally, they come up to us, and we talked to them. We didn't know whether they were friendly or not. We decided to take a chance, and we asked them to get us chop chops of food. And they came back with a school teacher from a MACV compound and spoke perfect English. And he came up. He says, "Hello, sir." Started talking to us. They brought us all sorts of food: bananas, rice, venison, beef, fish, water. Wouldn't take money.
That's why you were at Zulu.
At Zulu. Right. Then they said VC would come here, they'd take us and hide us. So they come here sometimes in the day. And so they took and hid us in the woods and brought us more food, water. And then it rained that night, they brought us shelter and stuff and hid us.
Just two mountain yards?
Well, there was about five or six of them in the village that were helping us all together. It ended up as about 10 or 15. Then we asked if they had a radio, and they said they didn't have one. They'd see what they could do. The next day, here he comes. He says, "I know where a radio is," and he goes and gets him a radio, brings back a Prick 25.
Is he a school teacher?
No, this is Mountain Yard Lump.
Okay.
Most of the ones helping us used to work for FOB, the MACD compound, the Sioux. And, anyway, he came back with a radio and it didn't have an antenna or any headset. Well, he had in a sack, he had some headsets, and he had part of an antenna, but he didn't have the base to it. So we told him we needed a base, and he went and got a base. The battery was dead. We had to take the two headsets and make one good one, let it dry out, because the headsets got wet and well. Long went to Contoon MACV compound through the VC and got us a battery for the radio, brought it back. Next day,
how long did that take for him to get the battery?
A day. Next day, we worked on the radio until we got it working, and then we tested freaks 2 to 5 seconds on each freak, just running through them. And we come across 6025 and had a covey overhead coming in clear. And we used the call sign, "Glad this is downed aircraft, Glad Air 715, hoping somebody would recognize. And so they did. They bounced cab in about 15 minutes. The Mountain Yards had asked, if they got us the radio, they asked us for a Chinook to get them out. Captain Keller didn't even ask for anything else. I tried talking to him. They'd already bounced cab and had the ships there, so it was kind of useless to do it right then. They said they wouldn't take anything, just their clothes and stuff, they wouldn't take anything, just their kids. He just wanted to take him, his wife, his kid, and we wanted to take Lom and his brother. And when the aircraft finally got there, the whole village turned out and wanted to leave. And we couldn't load on the aircraft, so finally me and Captain Keller had to climb on the skids to get on the aircraft.
Did you take some Mountain Yards out with you?
No, we couldn't, because they extracted us with two lodges, because the Mountain Yards that were there would have drugged the ship to the ground. And I asked them if they could, is there any way they could go back with a Chinook, because the people have a radio, and I told them to stay on that freak. They were in panic. I don't know if they listened, but if they can make contact with them, the people know when the VC are in the area. They hit us for 2 days, changing us in different positions, bringing us food, shelter. They got us, they were getting us weapons, because our weapons were bad. They were building us a permanent shelter in case we had to hide until the Arvins came back in the area, a place to hide from the VC when the VC came and stayed for good. And it didn't seem like it was helping. So finally we got out on the loach to compound, or the cracker box. Cracker box, this is the FOB path.
Okay,
in
Conkton.
And they got the coordinates and all the information they needed to go pick up the others in the actual crash site. Downed aircraft. They went and picked them up, brought us back here, and that's what happened.
Yeah, I want you to tell me about each of the other persons. Just briefly describe what Vogel, Sergeant Ward, and the Major did, and Captain Keller.
Okay, well, Captain Keller was bruised up real bad for the first 3, 4, maybe even 6 days, I don't know, and then he started moving around a little bit because it was killing me. I mean, I wasn't eating any more than they were working, and so finally they were helping themselves a little bit and getting their strength back. And everybody started working together, started helping each other, doing as much as they could for themselves. And Captain Keller went with me to find help and radio, and
tell us about all the contact you had with the enemy.
Well, actual contact, we avoided as much contact as we could. We walked up on the enemy a couple times, but we saw him before he saw us, and then we left, just got out of the way, tried to get away from him because we had other people we were trying to get help for. We weren't out there just to fight them. We were out there trying to get help for other people.
Were you ever shot at any time after the initial contact and one of your crashes?
No, I don't believe so. And
hey, tell us about Sergeant Ward.
Okay.
Condition he was in.
Sergeant Ward's arms were, one shoulder was messed up, one arm was broke. His back was bothering him some. He finally started getting up, moving around. I put him in the shade, found a place in the shade for him by a river where had shelter and stuff. And finally, everybody go around there. When people started getting up, moving, every now and then somebody would go over and talk to him, and they'd stay there too with him. And he helped catch a fish, some catfish for him after I left. They found this pool there. He cooked for him, I'm sure, him and the sergeant. And Vogel got up after he started getting up about the 7th, 8th, 9th day, moving around a little. He could urinate by himself, and he could crawl around. And finally, he got up and started walking good, where he wasn't dizzy when he got up. And he helped catch the fish, bail the pool out of the water. And the major was, his leg was fractured so bad that if you moved him, he'd have passed out. So most all he could do was just lay there, and he was just moral support more than anything. He kept us together. And we had one black medic that died 4 days after the crash from a bad hip injury. And he was delirious for about a day. Then we had...
How was it he died and the others who were apparently just as badly injured managed to survive?
Well, he had a wound that was bleeding, plus it was, it wasn't free bleeding, but it was bleeding because he'd move around, and his hip bone was sticking through the skin, a big hole in his hip, and his leg was broken in about 4 places, just like jelly. And he'd move around, and it wouldn't do any good, and you couldn't keep him still. And he just killed himself, is what it amounted to. And then,
you mean directly or just through losing the will to live?
Losing the will to live. He give up. And
what did you have in the way of medicine?
We had bandages and methylate and Vaseline bandages, and one syringe with some Apothal or something, and then
atropine?
I don't know if it was atropine. It was
probably not. Okay.
Apothal, I think, or something like that. And then they had we had a couple bottles of either BTs or something injected into the bloodstream, plasma.
Was it Medicaid?
It was in it.
Able to render any assistance at all?
No, he was. He was too badly hurt. He couldn't move around, and when he did start moving around, it killed him.
All right, this accounts for 4 passengers. I understand there were 2 others on the aircraft.
Okay.
You picked up a total of 6, is that right?
Ellen died from a head wound after that.
No, I thought he was co-pilot.
He was co-pilot. He died from a head wound after the crash about 30 minutes to an hour.
All right.
But then the other passengers were thrown from the aircraft and killed on impact.
Okay.
Their bodies were already decomposed by the time I got up, moved around and found them. They were laying on the rocks dead, and we never did hear a word from them. I buried Ellen and Zollicoffer, the black dude, in some shallow graves there near the campsite. And the others, I just let the body decompose because they were out in the open. And by the time I could get to them, they were so badly decomposed, I couldn't touch them.
Right. You know how that works, right? Okay, well,
We were sitting in Kontum, and they come in and told us that we had to go in and pick up some U.S. packs at Doctor 2. So we went out to the bird, started flying up there, and we ran into some heavy overcast, so we started low-level along the road.
Well, kind of try to talk into it, because there's a lot of noise.
No. Well, on the way up there, when we was low-leveling over the road, took some mortar rounds or something alongside of us. We kept on going. We made radio contact with them in Doctor 2. And I remember telling them how to tell them. I remember them telling us how to come in, but I don't remember them telling us anything about having to, which direction to come out of. I remember them telling us to come in from the south. We went over the compound, crossed the river to the west, circled over the jungle there, started taking small arms far, and Gunner said we took a hit on the skid on his side. I looked back, and I thought I saw where we took a couple hits in the tail boom. And pilot radioed in, told him that we were taking heavy small arms fire. We went in and sat down in the inner pad. While we were picking up the six U.S. PACS advisors, had two rounds incoming hit right next to POL. And I told the pilot, he asked if we were up, and I looked and we had all six packs. So we took off. He come up fast and hot, banked to left and headed out towards the west. Instead of staying low where hopefully maybe all we would have took was small arms fire, he popped up high and just sucked the cyclic up under his armpit. And we were up to, I guess we started taking 51 hits about 400 or 500 feet up in the air. And I spotted two 51s that were firing at us. One I know for sure was a 51. It was mounted on either a hand carriage stand or a vehicle stand or something, but I saw it by the trees. It was definitely a mounted machine, heavy machine gun. And the aircraft started taking hits in various places. Took some hits on my side, and we started losing power, and I looked back, and there was oil all over, running out of the engine deck, and all over the tail boom, and some had gotten on the engine exhaust pipe and was smoking. And we started going down. That's all the pilot said. All the pilot didn't get out of Mayday or anything. He just said, we're going down. And the last thing I remember is just grabbing hold of barber pole, and I had the barber pole in one hand and the 60 in the other. And when I come to, I was about 25 feet from the aircraft. And the aircraft was burning, and it just started getting secondaries. Everybody was out except for the aircraft commander, Lieutenant Hunsinger. He was still in the seat. He was burned.
How did they get out? Themselves, or did somebody help them?
Well, I imagine most of them were slung out. All I can say is the ones that told me that Lee drug them out, I have to believe him because I was unconscious at the time. I didn't wake up until the aircraft was vacant when I woke up. There was no one in it except for Lieutenant Hunsinger, and he was dead.
Do you remember the enemy shooting at you while you were on the ground?
I remember when I got up and took my helmet off, and I tried to walk, and I couldn't. I had to crawl for a while. I jumped up, and I remember something ricocheting by me. I didn't pay no attention. All I wanted to do was just get out of there and find somebody to be with. I threw my chicken plate off, and I started down the river. I was going to try and make it to Doctor 2. About that time, I looked over my right. I saw some movement, and I saw the gunner, Lee. I saw his head bobbing up and down in the elephant grass. So I cut across the corner of the riverbank, and up to the grass. Well, Lee told me that he said the aircraft was on the ground a good 5 minutes before it started burning. And I was on the ground when I come to. I was laying on my face, and that's why my face is all messed up, my eyes and everything. And so he said it was on the ground a good 5 minutes before it started burning. And when I come to, there was nobody around the aircraft. Except me and the pilot that was burning up an aircraft, and the aircraft was about half burned down, so I guess I was unconscious for about 7 minutes. Well, I found Lee in an elephant grass, and he had all the packs there that were still alive. And he told me that Hunsinger didn't make it, and I told him I knew. I saw him in the aircraft.
Do you remember how many other passengers you saw? You said he had all of them.
I saw Captain Keller, Doc, that Spec 4 medic. I saw Major Warmath and Sergeant Ward. And at the time, I didn't know where any of the others were because everything happened so fast, I just don't remember seeing no bodies laying around.
Go ahead.
And then we laid there, and everything just kept getting heavier and heavier. And I don't remember where I fell asleep or what, but next thing I knew, it was raining, or it was dark. Now, I think it rained that night. I'm not too sure about the first three or four nights. It's really bad for me because I was out of my head. I was dreaming, and everybody that was there, I was just constantly dreaming and kicking and trying to walk around in my sleep and just making it hard on everybody else. And, well, everybody, like on the first day, everybody was just laying around moaning from their pains, and Lee was trying to get around everybody and find out who all was still alive and how bad the ones that were still alive were hurting. And he said there were some bodies laying down by the river, and I never saw no bodies when I come through there. I was just trying to find somebody that I knew to get with, because I still didn't know what was going on. And, Sergeant Ward was laying across from me up against the sandbank. And he was in pretty bad shape, looked like his eyes is all blacked up just like mine. Face all puffed up, looked like he was in pretty bad shape.
Was he able to help anybody, or was he in too bad a shape to help anybody?
First couple days, there was nobody able to help anybody, only Lee.
Okay. How about Major Warman? What was his condition at the time?
His condition was, the same condition had been all along. His leg was broken pretty bad, and he couldn't be moved. We just tried to move him just as little as possible because he was hurt so bad. Because he just, like the very last day when we left, when they loaded him up on the stretcher, he almost passed out from pain. And
about the medic? What was he doing at the time?
Well, the medic, Doc, was, he was trying to help Lee. He was trying to tell Lee how to take care of the people. Because Doc, he was shut up. His buttocks were shut up pretty bad. He was pretty badly wounded. And he was trying to instruct Lee on how to bandage the people and what bandages to use and what bandages not to use. And then the second day is pretty much the same way. Lee went down and got water for us at the river after he found an ammo can. And come back, and the major had Lee go around to Captain Keller and get his C rations, get Sergeant Ward's C rations, and they combined all the C rations that they had with him at the time. And we would just ration those for the first few days. And we sit there and we try to just give everybody an equal portion and a fair share so everybody just stands as much chance of living as everybody else. And finally, when we exhausted those C rations, Major Warmath remembered that the bodies down by the river should have some. And Lee went down there once, and he said the smell of the bodies is too bad he couldn't get to them. So he said he'd try later that evening, and that was the same evening, I believe that was the fourth day, the same evening that we found the Arvin, because the Arvin come into our camp, he had a small bag of rice and a can of turkey, bone turkey. And he shared it with us. And we helped patch him up. He had some small shrapnel wounds in his chest, and he had looked like an AK round just through his side just a little bit. And he went down there with Lee to get the rations. And the first couple days, Lee kept asking him if the Arvin would go with him to Khantoum or Doc Mode. First they wanted to go to Doc Mode and try and get help. And at first he said he wasn't going to go. He says, Buku VC. And then they tried to get him to go to Khantoum and he said he'd go. But he never went. Every time he asked him about it, he wouldn't go. He said, there's too many VC. So finally about the fifth day, everybody was still hanging in. I don't remember whether Doc died on the fourth day or the fifth day, but when he was really in sorry shape. His legs were all messed up, and he told Lee to take his pants off, so Lee took his pants off. First he cut one of the legs off, and that didn't do no good, so he told him to take his pants off, so he took his pants off. And he was still squirming around, constantly hollering for somebody to move his legs here and there. And just constantly, just wouldn't be quiet at all, period. And finally, then he kept begging somebody to shoot him. He wanted Lee to take him down to the river or else just shoot him. And everybody just told him, we're not going to do it. You're just going to have to lay there and just do the best you can until we get help. So he started crawling towards the river, and he passed out before he got to the river. And Lee went to try and help him. And Lee said his heart had stopped, and Sergeant Ward told him to one of those injections in the first aid kit to give him to get his heart beating again. He was supposed to speed up his heart or something. And Lee hurried up and gave it to him, and it didn't do no good. I guess waited too long to give him an injection or else didn't get to him in time. And Lee buried him either that night or that morning, I don't remember. And the nights, by this time, I can't remember much what goes on at nights, because it seemed like the further along we went, the wilder my dreams were. I was having dreams where LERP teams were coming in and getting us, and loaches were flying in and picking us up at night and everything. I was having some real weird dreams. And that sixth night, the same thing was going on. Now Arvin was still there. He was helping us find food and everything. Showed us some greens that we could pick, and we could either eat them raw or we could boil them in a steel pot and eat them. And he found us some berries. And everybody by this time is getting where they can move around a little bit and help each other a little bit more. And by the seventh day, I was up around on my feet pretty good, and so was Captain Keller, and Sergeant Ward was getting around pretty good by that time. And I was still stumbling around, falling every now and then, but I could still walk. And I passed out, I think it was on the seventh day, I stood up too fast or something. Passed out over in the sand. Captain Keller threw some water on me and got me awake and drug me back to shade. Then about the eighth day, we're all getting along. We're spirits in real good shape. We're all trying to keep each other's spirits up, you know, because we knew we had to stick together, because that's the only way we knew we were going to make it, if everybody just stuck together. So we were all hanging in there and joking with everybody and just carrying on, trying to keep our mind off everything that looked bad at the time. And Lee was still going and getting water every morning and still waiting on all of us like a nurse or something, still moving her feet here or helping us keep the sun out of our eyes by moving her shelter there and all this. And it, we were really a pain in the ass to him. But about the ninth day, we were making plans for Lee and Captain Keller to try and get out and get his food. And I believe they left on the 10th day. They left about 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And I didn't know whether we'd ever see him again, but thank God we did. They got through, they got a message out and saved us all. And then the 11th day, there was only 3 of us there. Me, Sergeant Ward, Major Warmoth, and the Arvin. And we were still hanging on, still eating greens. And seemed like the Arvin kept getting lazier and lazier and didn't want to do nothing. And he almost had to beat the Arvin to get him to go hunt food with you. He just wanted to lay around. Seemed like after Lee left, the Arvin didn't want to do nothing. He just, you know, go away, mister, you're bugging me. And we were still getting plenty of water. Sergeant Ward was going down carrying water back for us with a steel pot. And me and Arvin went and got some berries. He was getting greens. And about the 12th day, things were pretty well the same way it was before. Just the 4 of us there, the Arvin, 3 U.S.'s. Same routine, got up that morning. Stumbled around, got feeling better and complaining about her aches and pains. Went to the river and got some water before it got too hot. Went and found some greens and cooked them and some berries and ate them. Laid around out in the shade, trying to keep from sweating so much. And then the very last day we were there, the 13th, I remember pretty good. We got up and the Arvin was still there. First thing he did was pack up his mosquito net. He watered it all up nice and tight and took some old bandages and tied it up in a little neat bundle, stuck in his pocket. He had a Nomex shirt he wore like a jacket, and he had his jacket on.
had his hat ball pulled down. 1 minute he was there, and the next he wasn't. This was about, I guess about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and we never saw him again, period. And we were just getting ready to eat. Sergeant Ward just went to get some grains, and there was a FACT aircraft flying around us up above us. And Major Warmouth said that he wanted, from now on, either me or the E6, when there was a aircraft up there, to be out there trying to get their attention. So I went out there with a green handkerchief and started waving. And then about that time, I saw three snakes coming over the horizon. Okay, I saw these snakes coming, and I've been flying for quite a while and usually know how hunter killer teams work. And usually I fly with load snake, load snake, load snake. And I figured they had loaches coming in with them too, but I didn't see them. All I saw was the snakes. And I started looking around, and about that time I heard some loaches coming up the river valley. And about that time I looked back to where we were, kind of had our area operations set up. And Sergeant Ward was just coming to the jungle grass with his greens. I told him, I said, "Good God, Pop Smoke, there's loaches coming." And these loaches, they just come full speed, just buzzing, whipping around. I was so happy. I was waving my good arm, my bad arm, and trying to laugh and cry at the same time. And, it was glorious. There were, looked like the whole sky was just covered with snakes and slicks. And the loaches kept buzzing around the AO trying to draw fire. And they checked out the whole AO for about five, maybe 6 minutes. And then they popped the either Willie Peter or White Smoke, because when it hit, it sparkled on the way down. And then when it hit, it just scattered, and that was it. It didn't smoke or nothing. I get assumed it was Willie Pete. And that was for the first slick that brought in the four riflemen. They come in, hovered down by a wreckage. Rifleman jumped off with a stretcher. And by this time, me and Sergeant Ward had already had all the cargo doors and everything we was using for shelter torn down, so they wouldn't blow around and hit anybody and hurt them. And we had the top cargo door off the top of Major Warmath so we could get him out. I didn't know they had a stretcher. We were going to use a 18-inch jump drawer to put him on, to load him on the aircraft, and they showed up with a stretcher. And they helped us get him on, and Major Warmouth almost passed out when he tried to put him on the stretcher. He was in so much pain. And they were trying to be as gentle as they could and hurry up as much as they could, because they didn't know what to expect, and neither did we, because this was the first time an attempt had been made to get us out. We had never heard any shots in that area or any voices or any sign of VC or NVA for about the last 4 or 5 days, but we didn't know with all this aircraft buzzing around here for so long if they wouldn't start popping up all of a sudden. The riflemen were trying to hurry, and we was trying to hurry, and was trying to pick up their weapons, the two that were carrying Major Warmath. I was carrying one of their weapons, and Sergeant Ward was carrying one of their weapons. And we tried to keep up with them, and almost fell once in the gravel and everything. That's all I would have needed was a fall and get messed up, and then have them to have come back and get me. But we made it to the second aircraft. One of the riflemen popped smoke, and the second slick come in and sit down about 20 yards from where the first one sat down on a little sandbar. And we went up, and the pilots waved to us. We got in, the gunner helped him load up the people on his side. The crew chief helped me on my side. We all got in, got buttoned up. Pilot lifted up, headed north, and then did a 180 and headed right back out south, just treetop level, just fast as it could go. And we just kept going like that. Seemed till we got way past, clear down past Dr. O2, he's his treetop level, and then all of a sudden he popped up. And on the way back, you could look over and see Dr. O2, and it was nothing, just a big black spot. I never bothered to look at Tan Can, but Dr. O2 is really messed up to the max. And they bring us back here and fix us all up. We got to call our folks, and that's about it. Okay, the only contact I remember us having with the enemy the whole 13 days was the first day right after the crash. I remember trying to get up, and I remember seeing muzzle flashes and hearing bullets whiz by us. And when I found Lee, he was shooting a chunker. He was firing 79 towards the ridge line. I don't know what he was shooting at. I guess he was firing at the muzzle flashes I saw. He fired maybe 3-4 rounds. I don't know how many. And if he was shooting where those were, I saw the muzzle flashes. He was putting them right in there on them. And that first night, first day, we just stuff just whizzing by overhead. That's the only contact I ever remember us having.
This is Staff Sergeant Walter Ward. I was at Tan Can during the siege and overrun of Tan Can. On the morning of the 23rd of April, we started receiving heavy incoming from 122 rockets and 130 artillery pieces. It was a seizure that lasted throughout the day and continued on through the night. Overall, in approximately a 24-hour period, we received probably 250, maybe 300 rounds of artillery. The siege started to overrun Tan Can about 1,100 hours the night of the 23rd. Our tanks were sighted or heard east of Dato District, and a road that goes into Tumarong Valley, I believe. The tanks maneuvered out, and we had Stinger aircraft and Victor aircraft up, and they were shooting at them. They counted in the vicinity of 15 to 20 tanks, six of which they knocked out. The tanks were all on the road moving south towards Tan Can. They were running at fairly high speeds, average of 20 to 30 miles an hour. There was two of them that made it into Tan Can, and that stopped the firing on that because of the security of the village itself. They were in the geographical limits of the village then, the two of them. Vector Bird and Stinger Bird continued to shoot at them. They were interrupted somewhat by P-52 strikes. They had to move out of the area to clear for P-52s. But the tanks took advantage of this and moved on in closer to Tan Can. I don't know how many was in the village one time. I was in a little bunker, fighting bunker, in the northeast corner of the MACV compound at Tan Can. I had a radio and I was monitoring all transmissions. The shelling never stopped all day, and well, like I said, all day and through the night. There was four rounds at a time, sometimes two rounds at a time, coming in about every 2 or 3 to 5 minutes. Well, there was very little sleep. There was a lot going on. The regimental talk had got destroyed that day, and the 42nd RCAT tuck was being substituted as 22nd Division forward tuck. There was a lot of Arvin officers and American officers in there trying to coordinate and get the tank stopped. Then early the next morning, just prior to daylight, the tanks had moved around the perimeter. One was on the northwest side of the perimeter, and another one was on the south side of the perimeter. There were two or three more that had maneuvered in just where, I'm not sure. But the northwest corner of the compound is the closest tank. There was two to MACV compound. There was efforts made to subdue the tank and kill it, but it seemed effortless. There was B-40s being fired by infantry ground troops that were a short distance behind the tank. They were kind of clearing a path. Also, the artillery was moving. It was very well coordinated. The tank finally blasted his way through the rear gate to the compound, which is closed. It is not open. It's got barbed wire, strands and strands and strands of barbed wire. He managed to get through there and shot several rounds into the MACV compound, and then he turns south and towards the regiment motor pool. At this time, he went directly in front of where we were gathered, the advisory team. We were all staged to go to the perimeter. There was one officer, I'm not sure who it was. I know one Lieutenant Jones fired a LAW rocket at a tank, and so it failed to stop it. Then there was another officer, I'm not sure who, that did knock the tank out and set it on fire, and it blew up. There were infantry troops all over the place. It was dangerous to move. We were all in a little group spread out 5 meters apart or so, and we made it to the old artillery compound that used to belong to the 7th or the 15th Artillery back in 1969 and 70, which had been leveled and made a helipad out of it for Cobras. So we worked our way over to there. There were snipers shooting at us. And at this point is when the two Kiowas came in to extract us. They took two people or three people at a time to Ducto Airstrip, which is west of Tancan, about 2,000 meters. I was in the second sortie to go out. The only remaining people were Captain Stewart, Colonel McLean, and Colonel Kaplan. They were the last ones to leave. Then there was a bird came back and picked them up and brought them back to Pleiku, or so I was told today. When we got to Ducto 2, we received pretty heavy small arms fire as we were landing. And the advisors there, two of them, Major and Lieutenant Colonel, were being issued orders, verbal orders over the radio at that time to evacuate. They were to abandon the compound, proceed southeast along the river to a pickup zone below Tankin, probably a 3-hour walk. We were going to walk out with them, but then someone decided that they could get the sea and seabird up to pick us up and we could fly out. So this seemed a feasible idea. So we called the bird and he came to pick us up. He came in, we popped a smoke for him. He landed inside the compound. Everyone rushed on to the bird and he picked up and banked left out of the area right into a hot spot. They had two or three 51s and some light machine guns set up and waiting for us. We hadn't